All right. Hey, what's up, guys? Ty here, Bench Clear Media. I am stoked to have one of the few channels that I watch religiously, and that's Retro Hoops. Omar, I invited him on, and he immediately said yes, which is very unusual. I usually have to beg people to come on. So tonight, I'm excited to have Omar. We're going to talk. I don't even know what we're going to talk about. I don't have a clear agenda. I know Omar flies by the seat of his pants a lot, too. So I think we're going to do that together. I'm excited. Omar, how you doing?
What's up, brother? Yeah, man. I'm still getting used to this idea of like folks reaching out and going, hey, I'd love to have you on. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't, you know, I'm just so used to doing my own content and my stuff that, you know, anytime somebody reaches out and says, hey, you want to jump on? I'll just jump on, you know, anybody's channel. It's awesome. So thank you for reaching out, man. I'm happy to be here, man. Appreciate it.
Heck yeah. Well, I'm going to address the elephant in the room right now. How in the world do you get your hair to stay so perfect every single video?
Are you kidding me, man? Well, so okay, so I'll give you this. All right, it's all about angles, right? You know, I keep this side of my face is where it's at, right? So if I turn this way, I'm a hot mess. If I turn that way,
good call.
It's a little bit better, right? So you know, having that camera right at you, it's tough. But man, it's hard keeping this mane, you know, in somewhat of presentable shape. But I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
I dig it. So my grandpa's side is Mexican and they like have crazy hair.
Yes.
Thick hair. And my dad's side's not Mexican and they're all losing their hair.
Oh, so there's a 50-50 split in my family too. I could have gone either way. Okay. I definitely could have gone either way. So my grandfather on my dad's side of the family is, you know, lived to be, you know, I think early 80s, late 70s and, you know, passed away with a full head of hair that, you know, men could be jealous about. So I was pretty happy about that.
Well, I got the Mexican side too. I got a thick head of hair and haircuts every couple of weeks is a normal thing around here.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, man, so let's start with this. Your channel, you've been around for what, a little over a year ish?
You know what? I got a thing from YouTube today about, what was it, like 18 months or something like that?
I think
April was like the first time, April 2020 was the first video I ever uploaded. Which was me just opening up a box of 90-91 Fleer that I paid $17 for in the good old days. So
the good old days of April 2020. That's how sad it is right now, right?
I know, man. I know.
We joke like that, but we're kind of back to where we were in April 2020. We're getting close to it, at least from seeing this. But tell me about the growth of your channel. Like you went into it just, I mean, you were ranting on stuff at the beginning and you're opening stuff. I mean,
yeah.
How do you explain the 18 months of this explosion?
It's funny because I have no clue. So originally, I say April 2020 is when I uploaded my first video, but I kind of jumped back into the mix of things.
Yeah.
Like late 17, early 18. I had a binder of some old stuff and it kind of, you know, kicked off some emotions. And I was like, you know, what are they doing with cards these days? What's, you know, what's going on with this stuff? And then I, you know, just jumped online and kind of moseying on into the hobby. And, you know, what I started doing was picking up. That's when I found out about Prizm. And, you know, as a kid coming from the junk wax era to miss this huge gap of involvement in the hobby. And then all of a sudden to see a 2017, 2018 Prizm card, I was like, holy crap, is this what cards look like now? This is insane. And so I kind of got back into the mix. And what I was doing was I was kind of just like in my own little hole, you know, opening cards. And I started going on Facebook Live on my personal Facebook. I don't have a lot of my Facebook is typically just for my family, really.
Yeah.
And really close friends, very, very, you know, close knit. I think I have maybe like 100 friends on my Facebook and it's really all people that I can pick up the phone and call, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started doing these and then I started kind of bringing my kids into it. We were just having a blast, like ripping cards. And then I started buying old boxes and things like that. And I have a good friend of mine that lives down the street. He's actually a professional YouTuber. That's his job. He has part of his ministry is on YouTube. And so he primarily relies on that as his livelihood. And he's like, dude, you should do that on YouTube, man. And I'm like, what? Like, why? Who would watch that? And sure enough, man, I bought a box and I started opening and you know, did it with an iPhone. And really wasn't a whole lot of, you know, obviously as I expected, wasn't a lot of folks that were, you know, lining up to watch me open junk wax at the time. this was pre The Last Dance. So not a lot of, you know, attraction on that, which I expected. I mean, that's not what I was doing it for. I just wanted to, you know, open up some cool boxes and have a reason to do it. And then that's when I got into like grading and how to grade things. And then I dove into that, and you know, I had my first kind of run in with PSA, and then, you know, that's kind of documented on the channel at the beginning, mm-hmm. where I got, you know, I paid, I think at the time when it was like $70 or $80 for what was supposed to be a 10-day sub that ended up taking like 8 months or 9 months. And only to have, you know, a handful of my cards rejected, a handful of them, you know, sent back to me as like eights and sevens. And, you know, I was just shocked. I was like, what the hell is this? Like, this is stupid. Yeah. And then kind of like what we were talking about right before before you brought me on was the, you know, I was like, okay, well, this PSA company is stupid. Like, this is dumb. I'm not going to do this again. Is there any other companies out there? And then that's when I came across HGA, and HGA had just kicked off. I mean, like, they had just opened up. And I did a sub with them, and then I did the comparison videos. And then when the comparison videos happened, that's when things like went nuts. I went from like 100 subscribers to like, you know, like 1500 subscribers, yeah. like within a matter of like a week or two, like 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm like, you know, all of a sudden I get this email that says, hey, you're an affiliate now. Congratulations. You know, you're, and I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, you know, so I'm having to walk down the street and talk to my buddy who's a YouTuber. And he's like, well, yeah, dude, that means you can, you know, you can, your content, people like it. You need to keep posting. And so, you know, that's what I did. And I think a lot of the growth for my channel really just comes from me not really having much of a tie to anything in the hobby, from an allegiance to like a PSA or a BGS or anything like that. I don't really have much of a tie to any of that stuff. But more importantly, I think what a lot of people dig about my content and like about what I do in general is that not only do I not have any allegiance to any of those companies, but I really don't have any allegiance to making money out of this, out of the art of collecting or the hobby itself. So my intention is never to buy things and, you know, wait for them to blow up and then grade them and then flip them and then, you know, do all this other stuff. Like, I'm legit collecting because I like to collect. Like, I have oddball stuff that nobody in their right mind would ever send to get slabbed, but I do because I think it's cool. And so I think that's kind of where a lot of people kind of gravitated towards the content eventually. And then ultimately people just like to hear me talk shit about PSA because nobody really does that. And it's just kind of one of those things where I think some people feel it's a refreshing take, you know?
I don't disagree. No, all you have to do is go look. I just had a live session with Mike. We were answering some questions and talking stuff. All you have to do is look at the topics of all the talking heads and sports cards now to know why people are frustrated. It's it's going to the moon 9 months ago too. Yeah. Holy crap. What do we do? It's plummeting. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And like, there's no perspective and like transparency. So I get it, man. I totally understand why people gravitate towards it.
Yeah. A lot of like my background. So my background professionally is in supply chain. So I professionally, you know, that's my day-to-day job. I work in supply chain. And so, you know, when a lot of these people, you know, I was reading on the, you know, Facebook groups and on the forums and stuff like that, just a lot of the frustration of people not knowing, you know, why things are happening the way that they're happening and why PSA just can't get their stuff together and why, you know, I answered a lot of those questions for myself. And then I started doing videos on my thoughts on why it was just strictly from a standpoint of like, a business standpoint and from my supply chain, my professional supply chain perspective, especially when they did this whole, you know, complete through dates and all that stuff. I mean, I was just like, oh, I've done this before. I know what this is like that. I used to do complete dates to get the head honchos off my back whenever I was trying to turn a facility around. So I know what that's all about. And so just lending that kind of information, I think really helps. And then I do that weekly PSA update on how many cards that they graded the week before. And so people really dig that information. And I just trying to bring as much information as I could. And once that kind of got going, it really just took off from there.
Yeah. Well, Mike did tell me, he said, hey, tell Omar that I am a massive fan of his weekly PSA update. He references it to me all the time. He's like, hey, did you check out Retro's video this week? I'm like, I'll check it out. I'm a sub.
Chill. Yeah. I think it just lends itself to knowing what's going on too. Like, you know, if you understand that they're grading 250,000 cards a week, then you can understand why people are getting, you know, modern cards grading out at a PSA 2. Yeah. Well, it's just because they're cranking them out. It's not even a thing anymore. It's a machine. Mm. They're just cranking them out. And so things like that are to be expected.
Yeah. Well, and you've said this before. I mean, it's not so much that you're a PSA hater. It's that you just, if you're going to pay the price, you want it done right. And yeah. You and I both agree, like the thing that's sticking out to us with SGC is that they're just doing it right, man. Like, grade it right. That's all we ask.
That's it. Yeah. You know,
swing a half point or a point, got it. One of us is off a little bit.
Right.
You're going to swing 7 points, like on a Lafreniere rookie that I crack out of a BGS 9.5 and give me a PSA 2. Something's wrong in the supply chain.
Figure it out. Yeah. Something's off there. There's a, you know, somebody in one of my live sessions mentioned, like, maybe they're fat fingering it when they're trying to put it into the system or something. Like the 5 is kind of close to the 8. So I can kind of see that, you know what I mean? So there's like where everybody's trying to like really figure out. And oftentimes I get that rap as somebody who just hates PSA. And that's, you know, I read my comments. You know, a lot of people say don't do that, but I read my comments. I got pretty thick skin. I'm from Texas. So, you know, they don't scare me, but you know, a lot of the things, oh, here you go again, Retro. You're just PSA hater, man. Da da da, this, that, and other. And honestly, man, I started off my grading experience trying to submit to PSA, you know, just like everybody else, because they were the top dog. They were the authority. And to be honest with you, and things like, you know, authenticating signatures and stuff like that, they still are the leading authority in that. And I don't take that away from them.
Yeah.
Right now they're just not working. It's just something's going on and it's just not working.
Yeah. Are you standardized in basically an SGC, or are you kind of an HGA guy as well? What's your preference now?
Yeah. I mean, I love SGC. SGC is going to be, you know, that's going to be, I'd say about 80% of my, you know, what I sub and what I submit. I love that tuxedo, man. I mean, I know you just got back your mantles cards like that, man. There's just something about them, man. I've mentioned this before in some of my videos that I really like this idea of, you know, the slabs and the grades kind of just being the framework or the frame that the artwork sits in, that is the card itself. Right. And I think when you think about it in terms of that, in terms of frame and artwork, SGC really just really frames it up and it looks good.
Yeah.
So from an eye appeal, yeah, I originally, you know, love that. That aspect about it, but then I also really like because I hold no allegiance to anybody. I like this idea of some of these new companies that are popping up that offer things that are intriguing. HGA, for example, with their color match labels, that was something that just was not offered at the time. You know, my boys over at TGT, you know, they're doing this thing where they're giving you this report card and feedback directly from the grader. That's intriguing, right? What's the other one? CSG. When I was originally dogging them pretty hard because I thought their labels were hideous, and then my brother who runs the case company had to buy one to do a model on it, and he goes, dude, you got to come see this thing. And I looked at it and I was like, man, this is the prettiest acrylic I have ever seen. And so that was intriguing, so I submitted there and just to see kind of what things look like and how that process goes. But if I had to pick one, you gun to my head, you can't submit to anybody else. It's SGC, hands down.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm with you for sure. As you've seen some of my videos, I just saw a sports card investor was promoting FGS or FGI now, and I'm like,
forensic, the Master P company, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, how many more can we have start up and peter out in 6 months?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I'm all for. I'm all for, change and, you know, market, letting the market, you know, competition within the market take place. But you know, I'm with you, man. Like there's a handful of these companies that are just doing the same thing. Right. And there's no differentiator there. They're not offering anything new. They're not offering anything spectacular. They're essentially just trying to do the same thing, and they're trying to grab a market share of what PSA has. You know, some of these companies that I mentioned, you know, HGAs, the TGTs, they're offering something that's a little bit different, something that's, you know, that's not being offered by some of these other companies other than just grading, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's intriguing. And I think, you know, going forward, if anybody else is going to open up a company, then you have to offer something that isn't currently out there, you know, and
100%.
That's the big thing. Otherwise, you're just another one of those companies that'll, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, you know, kind of thing.
For sure. And I think these companies don't realize, like, if you're going to go out there and take a swing at it, you better the heck not like falter in one of these areas. Like, CSG, don't promise 4 weeks and like send it in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, in your case, I know you got yours back early.
Which I don't know. That was odd that I got mine back so early. Yeah. I don't know if they just knew it was me or what, but I don't know. But I was honestly waiting. I was expecting a long haul on that one. I was already starting to kind of forget about them. And then I got an email and said, hey, your card's coming back. But I'm with you. You know, don't come half stepping if you're going to do it, because there's a lot of pissed off people, you know?
For sure. For sure. Well, you put out a video, I think it was yesterday, maybe this morning. It's all blending together. Certified sports cards and that whole dilemma of receiving the Jordan rookie. I mean, it's massive. It's a viral video at this point. I'm thinking, like, and that was a great perspective you gave. PSA sends the wrong submission to somebody, and it's like Brady rookies, a Jordan rookie. Yeah. Imagine the dude that was supposed to get those.
Yeah.
And he opens it up and it's like $100 cards.
Yeah.
His heart's skipping beats, man. He's done.
Yeah, this guy's expecting his Jordans back and he gets a paper Lou Bob, you know, and it's like, where are my cards, right? And then, you know, just, I don't even know, like, because it's funny that guy's video, he opened up, you know, the thing, and this is the second time that this has happened to this guy.
What are the odds?
To this guy, it's happened twice already where he's received somebody else's cards. I think the first time he was expecting some basketball and he got back some Pokemon cards. He opened it up. He's like, what the heck is this? You know? So imagine the guy, right? So the guy who's supposed to be getting his cards back. Yeah. But this guy like opens up and, you know, I don't know what he originally submitted, but I mean, I did the math and I did some comps, like $30,000 worth of cards. I mean, 25 grand in that Jordan alone.
Yeah.
You know, and if he was a, you know, a less moral person, I mean, you know, forget it. Those cards are gone. You know, he's cracking those things out and sending them off somewhere else, and he's making his money, you know? And don't get me wrong. Somebody in the comments was like, oh, you act like PSA isn't going to take care of the guy. No, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're going to take care of him, because that's a huge blunder, right? But the problem with that is, and I mentioned this in the video, is that guy paid upwards of $1,000 to grade that card, because that Jordan, you know, market value is 20-25 grand. And you know, Super the tier, he's got to go Super Express one day, and it's $1,000 to grade that card. Same thing with that Topps 52 Kobe. You know, that's like a $2,000 or $3,000 card. You know, he's got to pay the $400-$500 to grade. I mean, he had maybe close to $2,000 in just grading fees alone. And you would expect, when you're spending that kind of money, that PSA would, you know, kind of white glove, you know, take it through the process and make damn sure that those people get their cards back.
100%. Exactly. Those being the Super Express being mixed up with Economy, Regular, or I guess maybe just or even Express, just blows my mind.
Yes. Yeah. It shows me that there's really no, I guess, you know, in my opinion, right? This is my opinion, is that they don't really value like what's going on here, right? I mean, it's almost like, where else are you going to send a Jordan, right? That almost like they feel that way. Like, yeah, send them over here. Where else are you going to send them? You're going to send them anywhere else. So we're just going to throw them in with this other bunch over here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't sit well with me.
It creates great content. I'll give it.
that it does.
Thank you, PSA, for that.
That's right. Yeah.
That's probably why they were doing it. Let's be honest. They were just doing it for the content. They needed some more brand recognition out there.
That might be it. Yeah. What do they say? No
publicity is bad publicity.
No press is bad press, man. It's like, you know what? Let's go ahead and mix things up today. It's a Tuesday. We ain't got nothing to do.
Yeah. What do you want to say? Let's send a Jordan rookie and a Brady rookie. Exactly. Let's mix those up. Yeah, gosh. All right, so let me pick your brain on some supply chain stuff, because obviously we're seeing all kinds of retail issues right now. And if you want, I mean, obviously 6 months ago, you couldn't get cards.
Right.
Here you go into stores and you can get cards now. But we haven't even seen a new release for basketball. And if you talk to people that are in the know, we're having supply chain issues. We can't either get the materials for the cards, can't get autos back for the stickers, all this stuff. From your perspective, like, how real is a supply chain issue, like on the card production side? Do you believe that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So So I'm in biotech, right? We're having issues with, I'll take you back to, you know, the eighth grade chemistry, a pipette, which is just like a glass rod. Okay. We're having issues with that because we can't get glass made, and glass comes from, you know, from China, and China has it in a mill, and they have it from another farm that comes from, you know, they got to go get sand and they got to process it. And so if you get anything that's coming from China right now, they've been shut down for God knows how long. And it's almost like trying to turn a bus around, right? It's like once you stop it, in order to get it going again, it takes almost 2 to 3, sometimes even 4 times as long. So I definitely, you know, agree that, yeah, there's some supply chain things going on there that really mess with the flow of, you know, product coming to the market. I mean, we thought last year was a bad step. This year is going to be even worse. I mean, like you said, and I've said this a couple of times on some live shows, you know, by now we would have had already at least 3 or 4 releases of 2021, 2022 product, right? We would have at least seen Hoops. We would have at least seen Prism Draft. And maybe we definitely would have seen
Hoops. You've seen Donruss.
We would have seen Donruss already. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of that going on too. So the supply chain issues are definitely real. I mean, anybody who works in any type of retail, anybody who works in any type of manufacturing setting or anything like that, you know, supply chain teams right now are, you know, we're worth our weight in gold at the moment because everybody's freaking out, right? Because, you know, we can't get our hands on things. And, you know, from my standpoint, you know, we're doing, you know, biotech work. And so, you know, we have, you know, patients that are waiting on, you know, medicine and things like that, that, you know, we kind of take first priority. But even us who take first priority, we're, you know, we have suppliers that are just going, hey, man, I don't have it and I don't know when I'm going to get it, you know, and they're looking at their distributors and going, hey, man, when can I get my stuff? And they're saying the same thing. I don't have it and I don't know when I'm going to get it. And so it's legitimate, man. I think we're really going to see the effects of it, you know, for next year, because, you know, we're coming off of, you know, 2019, 2020, you know, just complete shutdowns of the world. Mm-hmm. Essentially. And then, you know, things kind of started to churn back into life again towards the end of this year, Q2, Q3 of 2021. We're starting to pick back up again. And then, you know, kind of here we go again with this with this variant that's coming out that's scaring the crap out of everybody again. And, you know, we're going into this situation where, you know, potential shutdown again and potential, you know, tightening of, you know, people coming into the office and things like that. So things like production lines slow down, you know, the flow of raw material slows down. And, you know, people got to remember a lot of what is supposed to be coming into the U.S. is coming from China. And, you know, you should see, I saw a picture the other day of, you know, they track all of these boats on the Pacific. It's all of the tanker you know, the big shipping container boats. It looks, I mean, there's thousands of them out there. That are waiting to get into port. And it's not so much that, you know, so the supply chain issue is one thing to be able to make stuff, right? And then you have the logistics side of it where now there's this huge traffic jam of things trying to get funneled into only a select few ports in the United States. And that in and of itself is a whole nother ball of worms. And it's just one thing after the other that have to, you know, we just have to clear the pipeline on all this stuff. And it's going to take a while, but these intermittent shutdowns that we keep having and, you know, these intermittent scares of, you know, the virus and things like that, that doesn't help because it just doesn't allow us to get back into the swing of things, to get things flowing again and ultimately clear that pipeline to where we can get to some level of normalcy, you know, but it's very real, man. And it's going to affect a lot of stuff going forward.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good perspective. There was a tweet earlier today that I responded to. Someone said, like, I can't believe how much of this chronicles draft picks basketballs out in the wild. And I joked and was like, it's almost as if Panini knew like they weren't going to have any product for the next 3 or 4 months. So they printed it. The snot out of this product.
You know what? And I've actually never, and I just threw that box away the other day. I've been opening up a lot of that stuff because I'm trying to find the box. I was hoping to see if it was printed in the US. Oh. Maybe like, you know what I'm saying? Like for that one product, Panini was like, you know what? It's going to be a while before our stuff comes in from China. Let's go ahead and print this product in the United States and let's just run the crap out of it and load up the shelves. But I've been buying a lot of that stuff because, you know, my Rockets had a really great draft that year. And so, you know, I'm a huge Rockets fan. So I'm loading up on, you know, pretty much anything Rockets rookies for 2021-2022. So I've had my fill, so I'm good.
You're good.
and still, there's still a ton of it on the shelves. So
That's the 91 Fleer, the 90 Donruss we'll be seeing around for years. You know, yeah. It's like, God, they're still pulling that stuff out of the warehouse.
Now, don't get me wrong. If the checklist on that isn't very, you know, appealing, right? But if it gets down into that bargain bin range where it's down in the clearance section, I'll walk away with some stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially for people that, like, you know, you know what I'm talking about too, the people that have just like the itch to rip something, you know, like the guy that'll go and buy a pack of you know, My Little Pony trading cards just to, like, you know, get his fix, you know. There's people out there like that. So they're, you know, that box of Chronicles is going to start looking, you know, more and more enticing every time they go there and get their heart broken because there's nothing else there, you know.
I'm going to go on a limb here. Actually, I'm going to be very direct. If you are a subscriber and you go open My Little Pony packs, unsubscribe from my channel right now. I will gladly pay
scalper prices than open My Little Ponies.
Exactly. All right, so let's back up then. With all that in context, what's kind of your current view, your current perspective on the hobby? And you come in from an angle of a collector, I get it.
Yeah. But
heading into 2022, optimistic, what are you feeling about the hobby?
So again, I'm strictly, I'd say about 80% basketball, about 20% football, right? My Rockets are my number one thing to collect. But then also my Texans are like just a complete dumpster fire right now. I don't even know if we're even a viable organization at the moment. Right now the Texans are not even anything that I'm collecting. I used to even buy the Texans in group breaks, you know, back when we were a decent team. But yeah, that's so right now I'm strictly basketball. And like I mentioned before, you know, we had the second pick, and then we ended up, we had like a few picks in the first round, like three total picks in the first round. We picked up Josh Christopher, Jalen Green, and then we picked up, which I think is going to be the ultimate steal of the draft, in Alperen Şengün. And so my outlook for the hobby this year is going to be great because I'm going to go hard this year. Like, I don't really do a whole lot of spending. You know, if you're familiar with my content, you know my rule is like $100 at a time.
Yep.
But I'm definitely going to break that a few times this year because there's a lot of good stuff going on in basketball. Now, in the hobby as a whole, you know, the entire hobby got shooken up this year. Yep. You know, with Topps losing their licenses, Panini losing their licenses, and then you know, this big bad wolf of Fanatics coming in and basically taking over everything right in the next 5 years. So I think you know, this is going to be the first year of like full product that we're going to see coming out in the wake of that announcement, right? And so the question is going to be, is how much overprinting are we going to see? Are we going to see any overprinting? You know, and then you also have this looming, you know, just idea of the supply chain issues and how is that going to affect, you know, autographs? And are we going to start seeing more redemptions? And are we going to start seeing product not showing up on the shelves or showing up late and things like that? So, you know, I think it's going to be one of those kind of wait and see type scenarios where we just, depending on, you know, we can get an announcement tomorrow that, you know, there's this new, you know, Suma Tuma variant or something that's, you know, killing people on contact, and all of a sudden the world shuts down and, you know, here we go again. Right. But I'd say I'm pretty optimistic in terms of as long as we can, you know, as long as the pandemic and things doesn't really get too out of control. Yeah. I think I'm pretty optimistic about what's going to be happening in the next year or so in the hobby itself, for basketball in particular. And then for me personally, again, my Rockets have, you know, put together a pretty young team that I'm really interested in watching. And for me as a collector, it's a very exciting year because, again, this is the year of their rookies. And I'm very partial to Houston Rockets big men, right? So the centers, the big power forwards, that's my that's my favorite position. I'm a huge Hakeem Olajuwon fan, huge Yao Ming fan. I was a Tracy McGrady fan, Charles Barkley fan when he was playing with us, Otis Thorpe, Robert Horry, you know, those kind of big, rough, tumble guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got a really good kid in that Alperen Şengün kid. And so watching him and collecting him is going to be a lot of fun for me this year. So I'm very optimistic about 2022, man. It's going to be good.
I love it. And I love that you're so dedicated to your team that you collect basically every player, because I'm the same way. It makes it so fun. I know Christopher well, because he was considering going to Mizzou.
Yes.
Mizzou Tiger fan. He ended up going to Arizona State. And so I thought that was a steal. And obviously Green's a stud, right? He's fourth in rookie scoring. He's just a beast.
Yeah, your one and twos are always going to pan out. Like, they're always going to pan out. Your number ones, your number twos, you know, unless there's some catastrophic injury or something like that, they're always going to be, you know, good players with someone somewhere at some point, right? But yeah, I mean, I just, it's exciting, man. Especially if you stick with a team. I'm a hometown boy. I stick with my teams no matter what. My Texans are a dumpster fire. I'll say it again, but you know, it's collecting the team and sticking with it. And then, you know, 5 years down the road, all of a sudden, my teams are, you know, a playoff contender, you know, Western Conference contender. And then all of a sudden a finals contender. And then you're just like, I've been sitting on this stuff for years. You know, I was right. And so it's just a good feeling, man.
No, that's true. To that point, it is tough, because sometimes, like, I went all in on Michael Porter Jr., right? That's my guy. He's a Mizzou guy. And I thought many times beginning this year, like, I should unload a lot of this stuff. It's at peak prices. Like, let's just do it. And I did, right? Because you're just so attached to your guys. And that's kind of what it's about, right? It's not so much about the flip for the dollar. And yeah, in hindsight, I'm like, I could have sold a lot of that and then rebought a lot of it for half the price.
Dude, I did the same thing with Teddy Bridgewater. I was a huge Teddy Bridgewater fan. I just loved the way the kid played. And, you know, when I started kind of getting back into football, I was picking up, you know, Topps Chrome Teddy Bridgewaters, Topps Chrome refractors. I even, you know, put a little money into a gold refractor, you know, that kind of stuff. And, man, I was picking up a whole lot of stuff. And then, you know, he goes to Carolina, doesn't do so well, then goes to where do you go after that? He's with Denver now, but he just got
the Saints, right? Did he go Saints? Yeah,
he was with the Saints for a while, and then he went to, I think he's with Denver now. He just got laid out the other day. That was scary watching that. But throughout all of that, you know, I unloaded maybe a little bit, you know, just to maybe kind of lower the cost basis kind of thing. But I just loved the kid. I thought he was a great player. I did the same thing with Dante DiVincenzo.
Yep.
Fell in love with him watching that Villanova game where he just absolute nuts. And then I'm like, yo, this kid is insane. And then he goes to the Bucks, where I'm like, oh, he's right there with Giannis. I'm all in on DiVincenzo. And then right as they were making their playoff run, man, he, you know, has the knee issue, and then he's out for the season. And I'm still holding on to a whole bunch of his stuff. And it really doesn't bother me, because I'm a big fan of the kid, you know, just in general. And so, yeah, it stings a little bit, right? Because you really hope your guy does well, because, you know, you could potentially move some of those cards and move them into bigger cards for some of your other players and things like that. But ultimately, man, it's you know, it's having fun within that ecosystem of what you've bought, and hoping that your guys pan out. And if they don't, there's no big deal, because they were PC items anyway, you know?
Exactly.
And it's always tough to hear those stories of people that load up and load up and load up on a guy that they really don't care about.
Yep.
They don't know anything about him. They don't know where he came from. They don't know what he's about or nothing. Not even a fan of the guy. And then, you know, the bowl chasers, as I call them, you know, it's, you know, they don't know anything. I guarantee you, none of those kids that bought bowl when he shot that three-pointer know who Manute Bol is.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, you don't even know what you're buying. And then all of a sudden his cards tank, you know, 100%, and you wonder why, you know. So it's just fun, man.
I'm with you. Now, there's some serious truth to collecting just players you just love.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's any sport in any era. Like, you can point to those guys that you just kind of fall in love with and you're going to stick with regardless. And this makes it so fun. Like, that to me is the best part of the hobby. It's like, I got my guys over here that I'm going to follow regardless. And yeah, I might have some fringe guys that I'm okay with losing. Hopefully they do well too. But my guys, man, injury or not, I'm sticking with them.
Yeah, if my Dante DiVincenzo's pan out, then I'm probably going to sell a lot of them and just buy a bunch of like high-end Olajuwon stuff.
There you go.
You know, so that's what I mean by the ecosystem of what you create. You know what I mean? Like, And I'll probably keep some high end, you know, DiVincenzos. I might, you know, sell a couple of the Prisms and maybe go pick up like a National Treasure or something like that. Just kind of trade up within what you have. And, you know, it's always good to have your cards be worth something, but
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's not what I'm propped up on, you know? And you know, you're asking about the, you know, kind of the, how the channel kind of got to where it's at now, which, I mean, don't get me wrong. I got like 5,000 subscribers. It's not really a massive channel, but you know, I think a lot of people really appreciate that about what I do, that I don't really, I'm not tied to, you know, the flip and the investment and the ROI and all this other stuff. And I think that's refreshing for some folks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Well, I selfishly had you on too, because you're one of the few guys that I think we could sit there and talk NBA all day. No one else in my little group here talks NBA. No one even cares about NBA. And I'm like, guys,
really?
I get NBA is getting crushed from like a sports car perspective, but it's a great time to be an NBA fan, because you got so much the new generation.
Oh my God.
And like even last year's class, I get it like overprinted to the max, but you got guys like Edwards and Cole Anthony and LaMelo and Maxi and Halliburton, like those, they're like top 50 guys stat wise already.
Yes. Yes.
Super underrated class.
Yeah. Well, I mean, aside from that, right? Like, you know, right now you got guys like, you know, like Curry, for example, right? A lot of people, you know, obviously the what he's doing right now in the game is just, and I hated Curry. I hated Curry for what he did to my Rockets, but I hate Dame Lillard because of what he did to my Rockets too. But like, you know, those are the types of things where it's like those guys that are playing, and I really look at Steph Curry, because, you know, people forget or people wonder how, right? Like, how is he so amazing? How is he so great? Well, first of all, his dad is Del Curry, right?
Right.
And if you know who Del Curry is, well, then you understand why Steph Curry is Steph Curry, right? People forget that Kobe's dad also played in the NBA. And if you understand who his dad was, then you understand why Kobe was so great. I mean, aside from his own ambitions and just his, you know, the Mamba mentality, which is, you know, his accolades, you know, we're starting to see this generation of basketball players that were groomed from children, you know, to be basketball players. And the cream is rising to the top, you know, in the situations like a Curry. And I mean, these guys they're going to start doing some pretty amazing stuff. I mean, we're going to start seeing, I think within the next 5 years, some of these old records just get completely shattered, and it's going to open up a whole new era. It's going to set the bar even higher. And then, like you mentioned, the Edwards, the LaMelos, those kids are going to come in and they're just going to set the bar even higher than that. So, you're right. It's an absolutely awesome time to be a basketball fan. And if you're into basketball, and if you've been there enough to know the progression of how things have worked over the last 15 or 20 years, then it's a very, very exciting time to watch basketball.
Yeah, it is. Well, and it's, you got this in football, right? Where they've kind of redesigned the sport so that it's more offensive oriented. They're protecting the quarterback. Stats are being broken. And you kind of see that now in the NBA too.
Yeah.
Where they're making it more scorer friendly. They're trying to be a little bit more lax and get people to the line now. And it's like,
right.
They're just, you know, to your point, they're setting the stage for offense to be the core of this league.
You know, they've one of the things I noticed this year a little bit, they're swallowing that whistle a little more this year.
It does feel like it. I agree.
Especially down in the paint. It's and it's really, you know, it, you know,
because it's like old school 90s basketball, 80s basketball.
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go Bad Boy Pistons just yet, but it's definitely not what it used to be, where guys like a Harden, even a Trae Young, were, you know, essentially foul magnets anytime they stepped in the paint.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like the referees were conditioned to, as soon as they set foot in the paint, the whistle got blown, you know, because they just knew that somehow, some way, there was going to be some kind of contact in that, and it's going to be a foul. And I think, you know, they've had to adjust a little bit to that game, but now I think we're going to see, especially this season and going into next season, a little bit more of that balance where there's going to be a little bit more paint work going on with some of the big guys. Which is why I think Şengün is having such a good debut in his season. But there's also still going to be that idea that you'll never be able to get away from, that a three ball, even though you're shooting it at a 30%, is still more valuable than a, you know, 15 footer, right? Yeah. So I think it's going to be really good to see that mix and that balance really kind of take place, and then kind of watch how the game progresses from there, because it's going to get interesting.
It is, for sure. Yeah, a guy like a guy from Cleveland, Mobley. You've talked about him before.
Yeah.
I mean, just an athletic big. He's and it's funny. I compare guys to like Jokic, right? Him, Jokic is historically putting up these seasons as a big man that, and it's not being reflected in his prices at all. You can still get a PSA 10 prism for $500-$600. It's like, come on, this dude's almost in the Hall of Fame already.
Yeah.
You know, like, first ballot. And people aren't paying for it, but you got like Mobley coming in as an athletic big doing what he's doing as a rookie. And it's like, maybe there's a resurgence of big men. I hope there is. The Aidens of the world, the Embiids of the world, hopefully they help with it.
Yeah, I think so. I think so because, you know, it's been, you know, forget about this season and you can maybe forget about last season a little bit, right? But prior to that, the 4 or 5 seasons prior to that, it was all about the shooters. Yeah. It was all about the 3-point ball. It was all about the shooters, especially with my Rockets. I mean, we got to the point to where we pretty much got rid of every center in our lineup and just brought in a bunch of shooters.
Yeah, 6'6" team.
Yeah, you know, PJ Tucker is 6'9" playing center. It's like, you know, we're pretty much small ball. And so, you know, I think that's kind of where the resurgence of like a lot of the, you know, the Kawhi Leonards and the, you know, the Kyle Lowry's and those guys, Damian Lillard's, those card prices kind of going up and up and up. And not a lot of love being shown to the big men because the big men were just utilities at that point.
Yeah.
But I think with that balance that I was talking about kind of playing out a little bit, I think the league kind of picked up on that. And they kind of wanted to bring some more of that balance. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, a lot of those big men, you know, the Vitches, right? I mean, a lot of those big men are international men and big international European guys. And, you know, the NBA is all about that international reach. And so, you 100%. Know, they weren't getting a lot of shine. And so unless you were shooting a 3-pointer, you know, they didn't really care about you. And so I think they're trying to expand that and keep that going and really open things up and kind of create that balance again to hopefully appeal to more of these European big men to come down and, you know, start dominating the paint, you know, a la Arvydas Sabonis in the 90s kind of thing, you know.
His boys are doing all right too.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, what's that one kid? Donatus, I think this is who's this kid? Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
It's like these
doing too bad.
These dads. Yeah, I joke. It's like, but I get excited to see like Bronny and Tiger Woods kid playing with them.
Yeah, Charlie. Because,
I mean, that stuff's just killer because you know they're gonna be bred, like you said, to be like cyborgs in their sport.
Yes.
But it's so good for the sport to have it because it keeps that family name in the sport as long as possible. You need that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about like, you know, you mentioned Tiger Woods and Charlie Woods. That kid at his age, I mean, what is he? 9, 10 years old, 8, 9, 10 years old. I mean, he's a kid. He's a baby out there playing literally side by side, swing for swing, stroke for stroke with his dad, who is arguably the greatest golfer ever.
Right.
And you got this kid who is basically at the infancy of his playing career already doing things that Tiger Woods was barely doing as a grown man. And, you know, his ceiling is, you know, you can't even see it at the moment. And it's nuts. Again, with the Dale Curry, Steph Curry reference. And even, listen, somebody mentioned this. I think I saw it on, I think it was Skip and Shannon, where he said, you know, they were talking about how, you know, LeVar Ball and his wife need to start getting the same kind of accolades that Archie Manning and his wife were getting for their Manning boys, you know, being in the NBA. I mean, being in the NFL, you know, the LaMelos and, you know, they have 3 sons in the NBA that are playing at a high level. You know, even Lonzo right now is balling out of control.
He is.
You know, and so, you know, it's this next generation that has been groomed as kids to you know, play and the dad knows what it's like to be successful, and they giving them the ins and the outs and don't step there. That's where I stepped and I stumbled, and don't make that decision because that doesn't turn out really well. And trust me, I've been there, done that, and just really, you know, kind of helping these kids navigate to not, you know, trip up on any of the blunders that they tripped up on.
Yeah.
And then ultimately just, you know, taking them to the stratosphere.
I love it. I mean, sure, you got Kevin Porter, Otto Porter, Michael Porter, Jr. All those brothers are doing great.
Yep. Yep. Think about that, man. That's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. Yeah, speaking of porters, I got my guy right here. A little KPJ action.
Ooh. Okay. Okay.
The first ever RPA I bought, actually. I had to do it. Once we signed him, I was like, oh no, this is gonna, oh, this is, we signed him and then we got Jalen Green. I was like, oh my God, I'm in point guard heaven.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I know Kevin Porter's got some baggage, but that dude is fun to watch.
He is,
and he's a lefty, which I love.
Yes.
Mix it up a little bit.
That is a very slept on attribute with that kid.
Yeah.
It's gonna be exciting. He's hurt. I think he'll be back. Jalen Green is supposed to be back during this road trip, but we'll see. It's gonna get interesting, man. I'm really looking forward to collecting next year. It's gonna get really good.
I'm with you. Well, it makes you, the supply chain issues make you kind of go back and dig into cards and maybe stuff that's out there now. And I kind of got sucked into some select basketball that's kind of sitting around.
Yeah,
with some people. I wasn't a select guy before, but that's kind of fun. But
yeah,
late 90s basketball has seen a massive resurgence. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because guys like us, we grew up in that era and we're like, let's go back and get the good stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, right now we have, you know, obviously National Treasure, Eminence, creme de la creme. That is the top tier stuff. And so I think a lot of guys, you know, in your and I age group are starting to think back like, man, what was that in our era? Oh, that was PMGs. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the, you know, the autographics, you know, the, you know, that was the skybox, the power in the keys and the, you know, the one in every 250,000 pack, you know, insert that you can get. And, you know, a year ago, not much respect was given to those inserts and those insert sets. And I think people just really didn't understand, you know, how hard it was to pull those cards. More importantly, how hard it was to pull them in decent condition because of how delicate they were because of the manufacturing processes back then. They weren't the best, you know, it was essentially foil on cardboard. And, you know, now with this whole idea of grading and condition and things like that, you know, the idea of pulling a power in the key Michael Jordan from a 93-94 Fleer box, and then have it grade out a 10 because it has no chipping whatsoever on any of the foil is just insane because, you know, now we got bricking issues and things like that. So I think the allure of being able to pull something, that maybe wasn't like so big, but condition wise, it's hard to get something in a good condition, has attracted a lot of that pump, into, you know, mid 90s, late 90s, cards. But then also we start thinking about Kobe. Kobe was 96, 97 rookie. So, you know, there's a big pump in that. And then, you know, Kobe's second year and third year, and then, you know, the Jambalaya inserts. And, you know, there's just a lot of really cool stuff that, yeah, okay, we weren't, you know, pulling the one of ones and the 10 golds and nothing like that. But we were pulling some pretty awesome stuff back then. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's a lot of interest in the sealed wax now. And I watched that Nat Turner interview and he was kind of showing off his graded packs and stuff like that, that people are really starting to covet now. And I think a lot of it just has to do with that. And, you know, the Ray Allen rookie cards and the, you know, I mean, back then I wasn't into cards at that moment. I think I kind of stopped really after like 96, 95, 96, right before Kobe came into the game. But, you know, I think probably the end of my, you know, collecting as a kid was right around the Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, rookie era.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I started to go, oh, she's kind of cute, you know, and then basketball cards just kind of went out of my head at the time. And then I think I jumped into Marvel cards at that point a little bit as well. So there was a little bit of just divergence, but man, it's especially now, I mean, I'm 37 years old and you got that little bit of disposable income and, you know, discretionary income. And you go, hey, yeah, man, what if I pull a Kobe PMG? That'd be dope, you know? And so you run that gamble, you know? And I think that's what we're seeing. That's why we're seeing a lot of this pump into the late 90s stuff, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's good. I just turned 38. So you and I both are exactly in the same era.
Yes, sir.
It's funny because people don't realize how short printed some of those inserts were, especially like Chrome in 96 to basically 2000. Like just getting refractors of inserts was nearly impossible to do.
Yeah.
Unless you bought multiple boxes, which nobody would do then.
I mean, you weren't buying boxes back then. Nobody was buying boxes. I mean, the LCSs back then didn't even have boxes on display. It was just unheard of. They would buy the box, open the box, and put the packs up for sale. And then you'd buy a pack or two. And, you know, the really high-end stuff was, you know, $7, $8 a pack, $10 a pack. It was like, whoa, that's big spender stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, man, you weren't seeing boxes for sale.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, gosh, I remember walking in and seeing like the flare boxes, like the actual box, standard box almost. It was like,
up on the wall. Ooh, it was just like, you know, like nicely lit. It's all black and gold. You're like, holy crap, man, what is that? You know? And he's like, oh yeah, that's flare. You're like, oh shoot, man, that's nuts. You know?
Oh, what's up?
And you kind of look up at your mom, and she's like, yeah, that's $25 for that little box right there. That's not gonna happen, champ.
Like, boy, get your collector's choice. That's what you're getting. You get collector's choice. Enjoy.
Go get that pack of Skybox for $1 there, buddy.
Dang it.
That's all you're getting.
Exactly. No, that's good. But I think people just are getting freaked out with the overprinting, and they're realizing like scarcity does mean something.
Yeah.
And especially scarcity of players that you grew up with, like, forget about it. You're going back and doing that all day long.
Nobody's printing anymore. You know, like Sean Kemp was one of my favorite basketball players growing up. They're not printing anymore Sean Kemp rookie card. Like, it's just not happening. Right. So anything that's out there right now, that's out there. That's it. There's no more.
Yeah.
You know, he's not playing, and that's it. You know, so if you pull a PMG, there's no more PMGs. They're not printing them anymore. You know, that's it. However many of them are out there, that's how many of them is out there. And then that's it, you know? So yeah, the scarcity is, you know, it's a big attraction, right? I mean, it's the same reason why everybody chases the one of ones, the golds, the tens. It's, you know, it's the reason why everybody, you know, wants to have that one thing that very few people, or if not nobody else, has.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the allure. That's the allure of it, you know?
100%. If you could go back in time and open up a sealed box of, or if you had the cash to buy any sealed box in the late 90s, what would you buy?
Oof, man. It would have to be the Z. I don't think I've ever put much thought into that.
I'll give you mine while you're thinking.
Okay, go ahead.
I think I would go back, and I think it's like $35,000 a hobby box now. It's a 96, 97 Topps Chrome. Just because you got the chance for the Kobe, you got the chance for the Iverson.
Yeah.
You got Jordan in there. To me, like, that's the holy grail year in the 90s, and it's the first year of Topps Chrome.
So I'm going 96, 97 Skybox Metal.
Ooh.
Again, same thing there, right? You have... And then you have the same thing, right? With Kobe, with the Iversons. I have a couple of those, but again, just the allure of being able to pull, you know, like some of those really low print autographics type stuff.
Yes.
You know, all that, that was like, you know, the top, you know, you had, like you said, your upper deck collector stuff at the bottom row, and then the top rows, and then you got the flares and I just remember seeing those boxes of the metal and the metal universe. And
oh, like, man,
holy crap, man. If I could, those boxes now, they're like 10 grand, 10, 11 grand or something like that. So, I mean, I mentioned it the other day about, you know, to my brother, and he's like, dude, you should totally do it, of doing box breaks. Like, cause I don't even, like, not in the sense of doing like box breaks and, you know, to like, to make money, like some of these breakers are doing, which is, you know, that's cool. It's a viable thing to do. But just doing it for the sake of like, hey, I'm going to buy this box, and if you guys want to buy a pack, I'll sell you a pack. I just want to break this open. Like, I want to see what's in here, you know? And, you know, obviously, you know, mail everybody their stuff. But, you know, that's where I'm at. I'm at the point now to where I want to open some of this stuff up on camera and pull some cool stuff and then potentially, you know, get some cool hits for people. But that Fleer Metal, man, it's Fleer Metal Universe, one of my favorite cards. Penny Hardaway was a huge, I mean, that was my guy, Penny Hardaway. I cried when my Rockets swept them. It was such a like a hard thing for me to go through. I was like a 10-year-old at that time. I was like, I had my Penny Hardaway jersey, and then I was kind of rooting for my Rockets at the same time. So it was like, but you know, that Penny Hardaway Fleer Metal Universe, hands down one of my favorite cards. And then I can't, again, obviously you get, you know, the Jordan Fleer Metal Universe, and then you got the Penny Hardaway. I mean, the Kobe Bryant's But yeah, anything Fleer Metal Universe, I'll take a box and rip that if I just had the cash to do it, for sure.
I always thought it'd be cool, like, get a group of guys or get subscribers and say, hey, we're going to go get a box of metal for 10 grand and we're just going to invest in it together. We're going to open it together. We're going to send the cards to get graded together. And then we all get first dibs and kind of buying the guys we want at kind of market price, maybe a bit cheaper. But if not, we'll sell them and make our hope and make our money back. We'll just do it for fun. Like, it'd be a blast.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought process, right? I was telling my brother, I was like, man, you know, the box is 10 grand. It's got, you know, what is it, 36 packs, right? I mean, you'd have to, math-wise, what would you have to do there to cover
the pack, right?
Yeah, you have it $350 a pack, you know, to cover your shipping expenses, top loader expenses and stuff like that. Maybe $300-$350 a pack. If somebody offered something like that, you know, and I had $350 laying around, I might take a crack at that. You know, I got what, maybe 5,000 subscribers. I probably scrounge together some folks to do that. That wouldn't be too bad. But yeah, I'm with you, man. That'd be one of those things where it's like, I'm so invested in that era that I would love to see just what's in there, you know, and do it live and, you know, make a big thing out of it and big events. It's not about making the money off of it. And if we hit something dope, you know, imagine doing something like that and then pulling like a PMG Kobe or a PMG Iverson or something like that. That'd go, the community itself, the hobby itself would just go ballistic.
Yeah.
You know, and it'd be a celebration, man, I think. But definitely something I've been thinking about a lot about recently. And my brother, you know, he's like, yeah, man, you know, that's kind of cool. You should do something like that. And I've been kind of tinkering around and looking at prices and stuff like that and seeing kind of what's what. But I really need to get in contact with some folks that can, you know, actually put one in hand. I'm a little sketchy about buying big dollar stuff like that on eBay. But
yeah. You know. Knowing our luck, we would open up the packs and there would be collector's choice in there. We would just like, we just stop the video and run.
Like, Jesus, man. Yeah. Yeah. Get completely. Oh, that would be the worst, man. At that point, you'd have to buy one of those a baseball card exchange, you know, certified.
Oh, for sure.
Pulled from a sealed box kind of thing, just to make sure everything's legit. But yeah. No, I'm with you, man. That's that would be dope for sure.
Yeah, well, count me in if you do it. I'm in.
Oh, for sure.
No matter what. Well, maybe not the Topps Chrome. No, I'm not dropping $2,000 a pack.
But the thing about, I mean, like Topps Chrome, for example. I mean, you know, if you're looking on eBay and those eBay prices, you know, that's what those guys are asking for. But again, that's kind of why I mentioned, you know, like I really would like to sit down with, you know, like an old dealer that has some of that inventory and say, hey, here's what I'm doing, man. You know, like I'm not. Yeah. You know, I want you to make obviously your money, but I'm not trying to get rich off of this. Like, you know, it's really just kind of trying to do this as a celebration for the hobby and the era, you know, what, you know, hook me up, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know. If you got any connections like that, man, let me know. Cause I'm definitely, that's seriously, it's funny you brought that up. Cause I've seriously been thinking about doing something like that.
Yeah. Well, when you need a co-host, it better the I better be at the top of the list. You and I can get you color commentate those players all day long.
For sure. That's the other thing too, man, is finding people that are, you know, that are into that era too. You know, my guy, Alan over at TGT. I don't know if you've caught any of the lives. That dude is, he's a walking encyclopedia with some of that stuff and way more than I am on a lot of those things. And, you know, sometimes he'll throw a player out and I'm like, wow, look at that reference. And he's like, he's like, yeah, that's a good one, right? And I was like, dude, I didn't think you would know about that guy. So it's cool, man. It's you know, people, we were kids, you know, and so yeah, you know, there's a difference between watching the games and like really enjoying watching the games. And I think very few people actually at that time at 9, 10, 11 years old actually watched those basketball games and enjoyed watching those basketball games. And that was me, you know, and there's very few of those folks, you know.
100%. I was a Spurs guy growing up, so I have a massive David Robinson collection. So I remember I was in Kansas City, and we figured out 1200 AM, I could still get the reception at night from my room.
Oh,
San Antonio radio.
Nice.
And I mean, every night I would slip into bed. My parents would be like, you going to bed early? I'm like, I'm just going to go listen to the Spurs game. I mean, like as a 10, 11, 12-year-old, just every night, Sean Elliott, Avery Johnson, David Robinson, Tim Duncan, like, it just takes you back. I love
Avery,
it.
Avery Johnson. I used to love the way Avery Johnson used to talk. It was hilarious, man. I remember, you know, you're talking about that you're have Hispanic heritage also. And I remember watching a game and seeing Vinny Del Negro.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, hey, That's in Spanish. that's in Spanish. I know that. That means black.
The whitest dude ever.
Oh, the whitest
fluffiest hair. Talk about hair, man. That player.
Yeah, that guy had a hair piece on him for sure. He had that really nice coiffed hair.
Oh, so good. So your interview with what was his name from TGT?
Alan.
Alan. Yeah. So I landed the other day. I actually flew in from Houston back to Spokane, and I had to drive 2 hours, but a snowstorm was coming in. I landed at 1 a.m. and my wife's like, "You sure you want to drive in the mountains at 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
I'm like, I got to beat the snowstorm. I was so tired. I'm like, what am I going to listen to? I threw on your live session had just ended with Alan. And so I'm like, all right,
here we go.
Omar, you better keep me awake. And sure enough, it was like a 2 hour interview. You guys were like bantering for 2+ hours all the way home. You helped me survive. You kept
that's awesome, man. I'm like very happy to hear that, because it's one of those things, man, where if you catch up with somebody, you talk to somebody, and I've had a lot of interaction with him because, you know, he was, they reached out to me. He was with another grading company that had just started, and he originally reached out to me underneath that hat of that grading company. And so we kind of built a little bit of a rapport there. And then he kind of broke off and did his own thing with TGT. And reached out to me again and was like, "Hey, man, I really want to bring you in. And, you know, we really want you to give us your opinion and stuff like that." And just kind of started chatting with him on the phone and stuff like that, and really realized that he was, you know, just really into the sports, into the hobby and stuff like that. And, and once we start, you know, once you get talking basketball, it's a whole other ballgame with him. But, he's a LA guy. So he's kind of got that LA swagger type, type of guy. And so, you know, and I'm from Texas. So it's a little bit of the yin and the yang with him and I. But it's always cool because he's into the same basketball era that I was into, and he's the same way, just a big collector, likes collecting oddball stuff. And so are a lot of the guys over at TGT as well. Those guys are just like bona fide, hobby guys, you know, that mm-hmm. really just like collecting the oddball stuff. And, I have a blast talking to those dudes, man. It's always fun, especially Alan, man. He's always a hoot to chat with. So he's glad we were able to keep you, eyes open and on the road, bro. That's good.
He got me really intrigued when he was talking about how they're spotting fakes and stuff with the mantles and the things that they're learning and the classes they have to take. And I'm like, I didn't think about what goes into that, even for like TGT.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
The work they have to do just to like not get screwed and kill their company.
Yeah. And he was telling me about a lot of the stuff that they turned down. He's like, "Look, man," he goes, "you know, there's things that we're just simply not ready for. You know, we're a very, very young company. We have some expertise. We have some people that we can lean on for further expertise. But then there comes a point to where it's, you know, like they say, there's levels to this, you know?" And, you know, one of the things that I, you know, appreciate about what they're doing is that they know what their limitations are. They know what they want to take a gamble on and what they don't want to take a gamble on in terms of their reputation, in terms of what they're doing for the hobby. And you know, they want to make sure that they do good business. And so they're not going to stick their necks out on something that they don't feel 150% confident about. And, that's always refreshing, because they could very well open the floodgates and just receive in everything and grade it and stamp it and slab it and send it out. And, you know, only to have it pop up, you know, a week or two later on, you know, CardPorn's Instagram that they don't know what the hell they're doing. And so, you know, it's just one of those things, man. And he talked at length about that. And we've talked about that separately on phone calls and stuff. He's like, "Man," he goes, "I got to tell you, there's, you know, a couple of 86 Fleers, man, that we would have loved to have graded. We just didn't, because we weren't sure. And we exhausted our resources and still weren't sure. And we just turned it down. We sent it back and said, sorry, we can't, you know, here's your refund. We just simply can't grade this because we're not sure." And so, it's tough, man. But I think what they're doing is great. And I mean, anytime you're trying to start a business from scratch it's always a pain, you know?
For sure. Yeah. To that point, I remember, there's a lot of those grading companies, you know, fly by night grading companies that I'll sometimes take chances on, and I'll go back and buy, like, I bought some Pujols rookies from GAI or whatever those companies were back then. I'm thinking, okay, they look really good. I'm going to just crack that slab and send it in. And sure enough, they're cut, you know, they're miscuts. And it's like, no wonder.
Yeah.
I can totally see why Alan's like, we're not going to be that company that goes down that path. Because you immediately get just
Because you can go down. That's a slippery slope, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like maybe you do one, maybe you get away with it, maybe you got lucky, you know, and so you kind of take a gamble again and maybe you get lucky again, but then it's gonna be that one that's gonna get you, man. It's you know, I used to be in oil field, and we used to have a saying that one oh shit will erase a whole lot of attaboys, you know. And so, you know, all it takes is that one, man, to ruin that credibility, and then all of a sudden it's turtles all the way down.
Turtles all the way down. Is that
all
a Texas?
The way down?
Huh? Texas thing? Is that a Texas thing? Turtles all the way down.
It's gotta be a Texas thing. It's either a Texas or a Louisiana thing. So I was in oil field prior to biotech. I was in oil field for almost 17, 18 years. And so I spent a lot of time between here and Louisiana. So a lot of people were like, what, you know, I can't quite pinpoint where you're from. Like, you know, they try to pick it up on my accent. They can't quite pinpoint where I'm from. There's a little bit of both, because I spent a lot of time in Louisiana, months at a time. And then, you know, did a lot of traveling. Then I got family that lives in Los Angeles and California. I talk to them all the time. And I'm just a big old melting pot of, you know, accents and the way I talk and stuff and the way I communicate. So it's never.
You can hang with a lot of people then. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I can actually. And the funny thing about that is that I'm, for somebody who does YouTube, I'm very, very much an introvert. I do not like people. By a general standard, I don't really hang out. I don't go out. My wife is complete opposite of me. She's very social butterfly-y that talks to anybody. And I'm the guy that's kind of in the corner just being a creep, you know? But yeah.
We can't hide our hair, man. We have to get our hair out in the public. Look at these locks.
Yeah, man. And it's actually pretty short right now, man. I've actually been trying to grow it out, but it just ends up, I just end up looking like a chia pet. And I gotta get a proper hair stylist that can like help me, you know, grow this thing out, because I haven't done that since I was a kid, and I really want to get, you know, like long mane, and it never pans out for me. I get so frustrated. I'm like, screw this, you know.
Get this man to 10,000 subscribers so he can get himself a stylist.
Oh, stylist, man.
Shoot, there's your 10K celebration. All right, let's end with a little fun, as if this hasn't been fun. Favorite Christmas movie?
Ooh, that's a good one. I got to go Die Hard, man.
Okay, see, I had a guy tell me the other day Star Wars was a Christmas movie because it was released on Christmas Day. Think Die Hard's a Christmas movie?
Come on, man. Christmas in Nakamichi Towers, you just can't. How do you? You can't beat that. That one, and then if I had to pick again, it's what's the one with my wife loves it, and in turn I ended up liking it. Holiday, Jack Black's in it, and The Holiday, right?
The Holiday, yeah, it's like Gwyneth Paltrow and something like that. Jack Black,
yeah, there you go. Jude Law, Cameron Diaz, Kate Winslet, Jack Black,
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's a good one too. That's one of those mindless ones that I can watch in the background. But yeah, as far as Christmas movies, yeah, for sure, Die Hard. You can't go wrong with that.
Okay. What's your favorite impulse candy that you grab in the old grocery aisle?
I can't grab it in the grocery aisle, but I'm typically not a very. If I have to go, I go Kit Kat. But if I have an opportunity to really buy candy, Sixlets.
Ooh, those are good.
Oh, those are.
You pop the whole thing in. You put your just in and suck them all in.
Just whoop, like yes. Do the whole. Yeah, Sixlets are. I mean, M&Ms aren't holding Sixlets jockstrap. It's that simple.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you got me craving Sixlets right now. Dang. Okay. When you're breaking cards, what's the go-to band in the background? What music you got playing?
So I'm a hip hop guy, big time hip hop guy. So. It's either Blueprint Jay-Z or UGK Riding Dirty, either one of those.
I know neither.
You know neither.
I know neither.
You're not a hip hop guy. UGK. It's Dirty South, Down South, hip hop. UGK Riding Dirty. That whole album stays in rotation.
Okay. All right. That's I like it. It's again, you just hang with all these crowds. I like it. Favorite book you've read in the last year? I'm assuming you've read at least one book.
I have not. I have terrible, terrible, terrible dyslexia. My wife is actually in education. She has her master's in reading, like the actual like art of reading and how to become a reader. She helps kids read, which is much more noble of a profession than mine.
Get her up here. Let me ask her that question.
Yeah. So I've never been a big reader myself. I don't think I've ever finished a book front to. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. That was cool. I read 48 Laws of Power. That one was cool.
There you go.
I would have to say 48 Laws of Power is probably the last book I ever read. I don't read at all, man. You can
ask. You do Audible books? Do you listen to books?
So I have not gotten into that, and people keep telling me to get into that because I like to seek out knowledge. To educate myself as much as I can. But books is just me, and I have a terrible affair with books. I end up reading the same line like 15 times, and then I end up reading 5 or 6 pages and then go, what the hell did I just read? And then I gotta go back, you know. So my wife, when we first got together, she's like, oh, you are poor baby, you are just classic dyslexic. So yeah, I have huge learning disabilities. I don't know how I made myself made my way through the world, but
whatever.
48 Laws of Power for sure is one that I read that I actually understood, and that you know, it was I felt it was a good book. So that's probably the one I'd say.
Fair enough. What actor plays your story in your biopic?
Oh man, we talking dead or alive?
Dead or alive?
Oh, DOA. I am a huge fan of Oscar Isaac.
Ooh,
that guy.
That's a good fit for you.
He is, well, thank you for that, because I think he is probably one of the most handsome men I have ever seen in my life. My wife would agree with that. But I like his acting. He's Central American, if I'm not mistaken, I think. If I had to pick and I had to go with a glammed up version of what I think I look like, then yeah, Oscar Isaac for sure.
What was the massive movie that just came out a couple months ago that he was in? He was the dad. Oh gosh.
He was the dad?
Was that he got killed in the movie? Oh, spoiler alert.
He's from Guatemala. That's where he's from.
Gosh darn it! What was the name of the movie? Huge movie.
Oh, Dune.
Dune. Dune.
Dune.
Killer. Loved it.
Okay, I tried to watch that movie. I got maybe 15 minutes into it, and then I just stopped. I was like, "What is this? What am I watching here?" And where it really went south for me is when the kid did the mind trick with the water thing. No clue what he was doing there. And I was like, all right. And I think I was doing something at the same time. So I thought it was going to be one of those things that I could put on in the background and watch. It's totally not. I may need to give it a second shot.
You do.
And just really sit down with popcorn and some soda and try to watch it. But I originally watched it because Oscar Isaac's in it.
There you go. Yeah, definitely one of those movies you got to pay attention to.
Okay, I'll give
it. When we were done, they're like, "What just happened?"
Yeah,
I'm like, "Just process that for a couple of days, and then we'll talk about it."
Okay, it's one of those. Yeah. One of those. But my favorite movie of all time to watch, I've watched it a million times. I can watch it a gajillion times more. Is Shooter and Devil Wears Prada. Those two movies, I can watch them a bajillion times over. I've watched them a bajillion times over. And anytime it comes on network TV, I'll watch it no matter what.
Devil Wears Prada?
Devil? You kidding me?
Tucci? Isn't that a rom-com?
Dude, it is the to call it a rom-com is an insult. It's like, it is the rom-com of all rom-coms. It's the best movie. It's so star-studded. It's just great story, great. I mean, Stanley Tucci was a freaking genius. Awesome. I don't know how he didn't win an Oscar for that one. I mean, it's, you know, this is a great movie. I like it. I could watch it a million times.
I get The Shooter. I mean, Mark Wahlberg, he's a collector. Movie. A Devil War. You're just so deep and diverse.
I threw you for a loop on that
one. Did. I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I haven't even seen that. I don't think I've seen it.
And here's the thing is I'm not ashamed of it at all. Like, I will sing it from the rooftops that is a great movie. That is a great movie. I'll watch it.
You're not the guy that's opening My Little Pony packs, are you?
I'm really not. No.
Okay.
That's where I draw the line.
Okay.
That's the line gets drawn there. I would have my Texas card revoked for opening My Little Pony packs.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would. Omar, it's been awesome, man. Thanks so much for hanging with me.
Dude, it's been a blast, man. Stuff. I appreciate it. I really do, man. Thank you for reaching out. And man, thank you for just, I know you've shouted me out on so many videos, dude. And it's I'm so appreciative of, you know, anybody who watches my videos, comments and shares and stuff like that. So thank you to you, man. And you know, I appreciate the time and all the love, man. I really do.
You got it. We're opening a box on your channel. I'm your color guy. We just
100%, 100% done. We'll set it up once we get this thing going and I hit that 10K, make a little money. We'll open up something nasty
on it. Beautiful. Have a good Christmas.
All right, man.
See ya.